I'm not necessarily teaching, I'm mothering inside of the classroom. And then I get students will say things like, you sound like my mother. And it's because they have a Black mother and I'm sharing my experience as a Black mother.
Welcome to Black Educators Matter. This is more than a moment. It's a movement.
Hey, it's Danielle. Welcome to Black Educators Matter. Our goal is to share the stories of 500 Black educators. We will celebrate the impact and achievements, learn from the lessons and challenges, and highlight the important roles that educators play in all of our lives. I'm excited to welcome our guests to the show. As a do now, please tell us your name, your role in education, and answer the question, why do Black educators matter?
Tina Ellis. Black educators matter because it's important for students who look like us to see us in pivotal educational roles. Teachers make doctors, lawyers, judges, business executives, entrepreneurs, you name it, and it starts with us. Black educators matter so that Black and Brown students see themselves within us.
And what is your role in education?
I am the dean of students at my school.
And where are you from?
Well, I claim two places. I'm from Danbury and Hartford, Connecticut.
Danbury and Hartford. I want to learn about both. So, Tina, tell us about your experience in
Danbury.
Danbury. Hello. Danbury. Did you go to elementary school there?
So, I went to elementary and half of my middle school there. And it's a small, predominantly white town outside of New York. And then half of my middle school, all the way through my high school career, I went to Hartford, Connecticut, which is predominantly Black. So I'm claiming both because they kind of got half of my childhood there and half my childhood here at the other place.
So in the first part of your childhood, did you have a lot of diverse classmates or what was it like growing up there? What was your elementary school experience like?
Not at all. I was typically, my sisters and I were typically the only Black children around. You know, we had white educators, predominantly white students all around us.
And what about your middle school experience middle and high when you switched?
In middle school, all the way up to high school, it was predominantly Black schools, predominantly Black educators.
What was that experience like for you?
I think although I didn't realize it was an experience until I got to college, it was a great experience because it gave me the opportunity to attend school with predominantly white students and then attend schools with predominantly Black students. So I had that experience. And when I went on to college, although I went to a predominantly college, I still had the opportunity to, you know, be able to take that experience and use it in not only in college, but also afterwards as well.
Did you go to college in Connecticut as well?
I went to college in Boston. I went to Boston College.
Okay, so you love the Northeast.
Yes, I'm an East Coaster.
I cannot wait to hear about how and why your journey brought you to Chicago. When you went to school and college, did you go as an education major?
Not at all. I started off as a nursing student and ended with a communication degree. And then almost immediately after I left school, I went back and got an education degree, a master's in education to teach. But then at that moment, I decided, you know, after going through the teaching program, I was like, I don't want to be a teacher anymore. I want to do other things. So I got into a lot of nonprofit social service things. I went to DC, worked there for a while. And I have a sister who lives here in Chicago, and she was an educator. And I decided to leave DC and come to Chicago. And even when I got here, I still worked for nonprofit agencies. And my sister was really the one who inspired me to become a teacher because she would come home and talk about stories about the students that she was working with and servicing. And, you know, for years, I would just listen to her stories and the things that were happening inside of the classroom. And I was like, wow, you know, I have an education degree. I can get into education as well. And so that started my journey.
How many different titles have you had working in like education and youth development before you got to your current role as Dean of Students?
I would say five. I would say I started as a substitute teacher. I became a teacher. I was a grade level lead. I became assistant dean of culture. Then I became the dean of culture. So maybe it's more than five. Then I became an assistant principal. And then I took a step back inside of the classroom and then I came back out of the classroom and then to my current role as dean of students. So I think that's six.
All the different perspectives. I can't wait to hear it because I'm sure your experience in the classroom is so different from a substitute teacher and what that experience is like to being a grade level lead.
Yes.
And what that experience is like, and then going into administration and what that experience is like, and now dealing with like culture and what that experience is like.
Definitely. They're all connected. But they all require different hats and different personalities. As a teacher, I loved it because I own my classroom, I own my space, and I was one of those teachers. I was constantly reflecting on how I was performing inside of the classroom to make my students better. So I loved it, and I had a tendency to keep pushing myself to the highest, but I also felt like I could make a difference outside of it. But of course, you can't just jump from a teacher to becoming a principal. There are gradual steps that you take. And so for me, it was important that I took those steps. So I started with the grade level lead, and my responsibility was pretty much to, you know, gather the teachers and talk about issues that we were dealing with on the grade level. So I led those meetings and I led the initiatives that we came up with. From the grade level lead, you know, my principal came to me and said, hey, I think you would be great in this other opportunity, which was the assistant dean of culture. Now that's a whole different bucket because I'm outside of the classroom. But what she thought would be nice is to have a teacher support in a culture role, because typically you have people who work in the culture world, they're not teachers, right? So she was trying to be innovative and said, let's get a teacher in that role. And once I got in the role, I was able to work with students through the lens of a teacher. And that really helped. And what it did for me was it got me promoted very quickly into the head dean of culture role. And from there, I didn't even stay that long because I was doing such a great job that I became the assistant principal of the school. So, you know, it's, again, it's all connected, but they require different roles. I didn't particularly like being a disciplinary, I didn't. It wasn't my passion, but it was something that gave me a great experience so that now that in my current role, when I look at things, I can look at things from many different lenses, from culture, from a grade level lead to a teacher, even from my own experience as a mother. So I'm not coming in with one view. I'm coming in with multiple views.
I think that is how like the change and the innovation and the creativity happens, is when you have these different perspectives and approaches before you figure out how we're going to address or tackle an issue, as opposed to just like a cookie cutter approach. Like, we're going to do this because when we're in this role, this is what we do. Like, no, look at all the different angles and layers involved with this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So do you find that a shared sense of identity and connectedness exists between you and your students? And if so, how did you recognize it?
Absolutely. So I have only taught, I would say, predominantly Black students, Black and Brown students, I would say. And there's a shared connectedness in two different ways. Obviously, we share our Black culture. And then I'm a mother. I have three children. And so I see my children in my students. And so it comes off in that way, because sometimes I'm not necessarily teaching, I'm mothering inside of the classroom. And then I get students will say things like, you sound like my mother, right? And it's because they have a Black mother and I'm sharing my experience as a Black mother. And how I know I'm connecting with them is because I hear things like that. But then we share different things, different cultural things. We share the same cultural things. Like, students will talk about something like their mom is cooking, and I could add my experience to it. Or if they'll talk about like they're an event that they're having in a, with their family, I'll share my experience with it. And we've got that connectedness.
I didn't even ask you, how was the transition for you, like growing up as an East Coaster and claiming, you know, like the East Coast and moving to Chicago and seeing how like the experience, the educational experience is here?
It's very different. It's definitely a different experience. The only aspect that I can't speak from is I was never a teacher on the East Coast. I was only a student from the East Coast. And I honestly feel like growing up, I had a lot more resources available to me at the schools that I attended versus the schools that I've worked with, where we're, you know, sponging up resources available to our students. So I really have had the experience of looking at like the have and the have nots. And I feel like a lot of my students just have not because the resources are not available to them.
What has been the most impactful moment you've had as an educator?
I believe there are quite a few moments that I've had. I think that at each school that I've worked at, there's been some moment of impact. And it's because when I leave, I always strive to leave making the school a little bit better than when I got there. I can remember one particular school where we weren't celebrating Black History Month at a predominantly Black school, and I could not understand it. So I solely sought out with myself and the students to create a Black History celebration. And we did multiple things throughout, you know, Black History Month. But the biggest thing we did is we put on a performance, because our students are rich in culture and talent. And I remember a student, we got around and we were praying right before we were about to perform. And I remember a student saying, I have attended this school for 4 years and we have never celebrated Black History Month. And I knew it, but I couldn't believe it, but I appreciate it. So that's something that's going to stick with me forever. You know, like I said, my goal is every time I go to a school is to leave it a little bit better than when I got there.
I appreciate you sharing that story, because a few things. When you talk about like the haves and the have nots. So although I graduated from Chicago Public School, I went to elementary school, kindergarten to fifth grade in the suburbs. One thing that we had was a music program. One thing that we had was like holiday performances. And in some of the schools in the city, we don't have music programs and band programs. We also don't have the space and opportunity for performances. And I think it is so important that every child deserves to be in somebody's play where they learn some lines, learn a dance. They get to stand on the stage. People get to stand and clap for them. You know, like they get to work towards a group goal. I think that's so important. We don't have that space. We don't have talent shows.
Yes, you are so right. And that gave me a moment to reflect on my own high school experience. We had state-of-the-art theaters. We had state-of-the-art inside and outdoor track and field facilities. We had a state-of-the-art gym. We had so many things available to us in the school that I attended. And when I think about my teaching experience, I have never worked at a school where they had all of those things. And our students deserve it. They absolutely deserve it.
Like, I'm thinking about all of like the dances and the songs and the just all the opportunities that kids are missing out on that we don't think about as grown-ups in the school, because we just thinking about the day-to-day operations. But for that child to say to you, I've gone here for 4 years and we have never done this before.
Yes.
Like they notice. Even if they don't say it, they notice.
It's very true. Very true.
This is just one of many stories, and we want to keep the conversation going.
Follow us on Instagram at blackeducators.matter.
Visit us online at www.blackeducatorsmatter.org.
Help build the movement by joining our Patreon.
Now, let's get back to our Project 500 podcast.
So after we've talked about all of your experiences and the things that you have seen, What would you say is the state of education in Black America, and how did we get here?
The state of Black education, I think it's always been a controversial topic. The education system was not built for us. But when I think about the year 2020, I think we have the perfect opportunity to change it. And I hope that I will be in a position to lend my voice to it, because for years, from the time that this country's been built, we've had a teacher standing in front of the room and students sitting in desk, and then they're teaching. But 2020 taught us something that, you know, we probably didn't realize we could do, is that we could educate in a variety of ways. Now, we're going through it in education right now because we only knew one way of teaching. And so we are experiencing these different things, and we're finding out some things work and some don't. But I think for Black educators, I think for Black education, this is our moment. This is our moment to, like, change it. So, you know, I can't say that I know what our culture was of teaching, because it was stolen from us. So we really don't know. But I think it's a great opportunity to look at history and what hasn't worked for our students, look at the present, and how can we change it based off of what we do know.
Are schools designed for children of color?
Absolutely not, especially our Black males. It is not designed, especially for our Black males. And, you know, again, this is something that we all know. There definitely needs to be more Black male presence inside of our school buildings, right? So that our Black males can see role models. It's not. I think the system, this is kind of like what the things that we're seeing in 2020 with young Black males and police officers. I think the education system kind of sets our kids up for these situations. I just think about how we've got more Black males in our special education program because the system believes that, you know, they can't learn the way that they set it up. I think we see a lot of Black males being suspended from school because the system doesn't know how to deal with their issues, you know, and I think a lot of our Black males leave school because there are not resources available to support them and their needs.
What are some of the things that you've seen over the course of your career? There's lots of research about the Black boy experience in schools. What are some of the things that you have seen?
I think one of the biggest thing is just, I think about one of my students who, unfortunately, he took his life, right? He took his own life. And I feel like we, as the school system, we failed him in every aspect of the way. Brilliant student, highest SAT score in the building, AP honors classes, and we failed him because he was crying out for help, but we saw it as a behavioral issue, right? And he just couldn't, we I guess didn't know how to support him because, again, we're identifying his problem as a behavioral issue versus mental health. He needs some mental health support. And unfortunately, he never got it. And his solution to it was, you know, no one can help me, so I've got to figure this out for myself. So I feel like we ended up failing him. We ended up failing him.
Thank you for sharing that, yeah.
You know, and I reflect on my own, like, what could I have done more? And I think part of it is I don't have the answer to it, because I just didn't know at that moment that this is what he needed. It was only because I could reflect on it now and say, this is what he needed from us. So,
how have you built relationships with parents in your role as Dean of Students?
I love calling parents because, honestly, how I build my relationship with the parents is I start by acknowledging that I'm a mother also. And that whatever their experience at that moment, if I've had that experience, I acknowledge it as well. If a parent is talking about trials and tribulations and I can relate to it, I'll say it. So, for example, a parent will say, hey, I'm a single parent and I'm struggling, you know, yada, yada, yada. I might say, yes, I too I'm a single parent and I understand your struggle, right? Or, you know, or parent may ask me for advice, and if I'm in the position to give it, I'll give it. So I do believe I have really great relationships with parents because I can find some sort of connectedness to them.
How about with teachers? How have you been able to build and empower teachers so that they don't rely on you?
That's a really, really good question. I had a side gig of coaching. My job was solely to coach teachers, but also in other roles I've played, like, you know, classroom management, I've had the opportunity to work with teachers as well. And the thing is, giving teachers their power, you know, what are some of the things that you are doing well, and then showing it to them. Like, this is what you do well as a teacher. Use it. This is your superpower inside of the classroom. And there are other things that may not go well, so I'm going to try to help give you that advice that you need. And sometimes I got to be blunt and tell you, hey, listen, this is not working. This is what I see. And it's that tough love. I honestly feel like, you know, we can't really sugarcoat, because we're in a state of emergency right now with our kids, particularly our Black and brown kids. We don't have time to make mistakes because we've got to get our kids to the next level.
Yeah, we don't have the privilege of keeping it pretty right now.
Exactly.
How have you grown since you began your career? Because you said you came out of college with a communications degree. Yes. Even though you started off as a nursing student, like a nursing major. So you have so many different lenses and have seen this this work through so many different perspectives. How have you grown?
I think the biggest thing for me is I've become extremely patient and insightful when it comes to dealing with students, teachers, administrators, and the whole educational process. I think when I first started off in education, I definitely was, you know, throwing a fist up in the air saying, God, we've got to fight this system. But now it's probably age two. I listen more and I talk less. You know, I ask others for solutions rather than me giving one. Inside the classroom, I'm very insightful. I think that when I, for example, if I have a student who comes in the classroom and they come in and put their head down and go to sleep, in the beginning of my educational career, I would be like, hey, get up. You can't sleep inside this classroom. Now I let them sleep because there's something behind them sleeping. I don't think I'm a boring teacher. It's not me. So what I'll do is I'll let them sleep. And when the class is over, I'll tap them on the shoulder, let them know it's over, and ask, why are you sleeping? And then you hear the stories. You find out there's so much more than, it's not your class being boring, but there's so much more going on. I think when it comes to administrators, too, when they make a decision, being able to understand the why behind it, sometimes my way is not always the right way. So it's, you know, it's good to see. They're obviously in their position for a reason. And then just teachers as well, being able to, you know, hear their why and understand why they do some of the things that they do. So being patient and insightful are like two of the things.
What challenges have you grown through?
I think the biggest challenge for me now, particularly since I've moved up in my educational career, the biggest challenge for me, I would say, are like a couple of things. One, school leaders are important. You know, obviously, there's always someone above me, right? Unless I, you know, eventually my goal is to make it to the top. It's important that the right person leads me. I need to learn from a leader. I'm a person that's very reflective of my practice, and I need to learn from the person who is leading me. And if I can't learn from you, then it's time for me to move on. That school is no longer the environment for me. So that always challenges me when I have a school leader who doesn't meet my needs. And then finding a school that is right for me. It's important that I don't feel stifled in my role, because I feel like I have so much to offer. Like, you can't keep me inside of a box. Like, I can help you. I'm not looking for accolades, but I can help you because I want to help my kids to get to the next level. Like I said before, my goal is to always leave the school a little bit better than how it was before I got there. And I think the one thing that really challenges me are Black educators who don't represent well for our students. Like, that's the biggest thing for me, because our kids are already going through so much. They don't need you, because we're already put in a position where they're looking up to us. And the minute you don't represent well, our students, you're taking away from our students.
Preach. What advice do you have for first year educators?
I would say stick through it. Education is hard. Stick through it, but find a niche in education and own it, whether it's inside of the classroom or outside. And what I mean by outside is it could be leading an enrichment or an after-school activity, or it could be athletics or some passion that you have, you know, connected to you being a teacher or whatever your role is inside of education, connect it and bring it to the students.
Are there any Black educators that went out of their way to aid in your success? Any Black educators that you would like to thank?
Let me tell you, there are a lot. Like I told you, I claim Hartford, Connecticut as a place that I call my home, because I attended an all-Black school, and there were a lot of Black educators in there. My principal, Mr. Davis, was Black. I had a Black French teacher, Madame Blanc. And this was really odd, because I was like, she's Black. How could she speak French? Now, that's just because I was living in a box. My high school guidance counselor, Ms. Haynes, like, she literally filled out my college applications for me. She filled out my scholarships and all those sort of things. So I had quite a few Black educators who just really helped get me to the next level.
And of course, your sister.
And of course, my sister, because she would be very upset. And of course, she's younger too. Of course, my sister.
Of course, little sisters rule the world. My little sister is also an educator. She's a music teacher.
So, oh, wonderful.
You know, you got to love the little sisters, the little teacher sisters. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Are there any, you got any other final words?
No, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity just to share my experience.
Yes, and all of your perspectives. Like, I really, really enjoyed listening to how you talk about the work and why it's so important. I agree with you. I think this is our moment. 2020 has shown us so much, but we are finding our voices, activating our superpowers in and outside of the classroom, and it's all for the kids and for the families and for the culture.
Exactly. Absolutely. 100%.
So everything that you have done, Ms. Ellis, it was, it is, and it always will be worth it. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Educators Matter.
Are you ready to share your story? Visit us online at www.blackeducatorsmatter.org to sign up.
Remember, make excellence equitable and thank a Black teacher today.